It's Thursday, January 19th, and this is Geek Nights. Tonight, conventions part two.
Let's do this.
All right, so my work is sort of in the process of transferring me from the New York City office to the middle of fuck nowhere office. So on Wednesday, I had to go work in this office, which meant an hour drive both ways, and because the locksmith was coming, and I had to let him in and write the amount of money on the check to pay him. And when I got there, the power was out. This makes it very difficult for a computer programmer to do any work. And it just really sucked, especially driving there on this windy, middle-of-the-woods road with, like, sticks falling out of the sky, hitting my car, and...
Well, that was due to the fact that we had a freakish kind of weather pattern storm going on here.
Yeah, it was just, like, in crazy rain and crazy wind, and that was it.
I mean, despite the fact that we live in New York State, and that we live in an area that's generally very cold in the winter, it's been 50, 60 degrees, sunny, rainy, thunderstorms.
Yeah, there was so much rain, I almost, like, pulled over the car a couple times because I just couldn't see, even with my wipers going as fast as they go. But it just generally sucked, and I ended up just coming home at 1 and being like, screw this crap.
Now, interestingly enough, today, when I got home from work, I, you know, did the usual, I'm home, lift some weights, whatever, and then I go take a shower. And as I'm taking my shower, power goes out. Damn it.
Yeah, I drove up to the house from the train station today, and I noticed the entire block, the streetlights aren't on, and all the houses are dark. And I'm like, the power's out, isn't it? And I see this truck at the end of the street, and I'm like, fuck.
Yeah, fuck. See, the thing is, they were working on something when I came home up the street. And then while I was in the shower, they moved the truck to another spot, like one step down before our house, and they cut the power off, and then they went back over to where they were working.
How did you see them do that if you were in the shower?
Because when I got home, they were at the end of the street working. I go into the shower, and the power goes out. So I get up, and I remember I saw guys working. So I look out the window, and now they're at the other end of the side.
Uh-huh.
And they're up in the cherry picker messing with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go back to the first spot again and start working.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat there thinking, crap. And I sat down by my computer to try and do something and realized I couldn't.
Yeah, that happens all the time. Like, especially when, like, the internet will be down, but the power will be on, and you'll sit at the computer and be like, yeah, I'm just going to check my fuck. I'm just going to visit slash the fuck.
Fine, I'll just play Counter-Strike. God damn it.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So we got an email from Eric G. of Newton, Kansas.
This is apparently the guy who was listening to the show with his PSP.
Yep, well, he's one of actually three people who listen to the show on their PSPs now.
Two more people started doing it?
Yeah, he's better. He's two more.
Oh.
Now, basically, he explained that the way he uses it is that apparently the 2.6 firmware update of the PSP, despite the fact that it breaks, you know, all your emulators and those hacks.
Actually, I heard that, like, now that they can get everything working.
Oh, yeah, but if you had the old style ones, you got to redo it all.
I guess. I don't know. I don't know the details, but
yeah.
I know that the real life guy has every emulator with ROMs for all of them and for every console working. So,
and basically, anyway, this firmware adds a web browser that has RSS capabilities, so you can subscribe to basically any podcast or any RSS trivially.
See, that's what the iPod really needs, is like iTunes in the iPod. So while I'm without plugging it into a computer, I can download new podcasts on my iPod. That's, you know, the PSP is still too big to be, even though it can do this, it's still too big with the, you know, this extra stuff on it. But if you made the iPod a little bigger and threw in like a little wireless card or something, maybe like a Nano with a wireless card attached, that would be the shit. That would be awesome.
Now, he also asked us how the hell we knew he was using a PSP. And basically, we have two mechanisms for knowing exactly who's listening to this show. One, if you visit our site with a web browser and download the MP3, your web browser has a thing in it called a user agent string. And it basically tells us exactly what web browser you're using.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you might change it. Some people just put funny stuff in there, or they pretend to be IE or whatever. But we generally know about how many Firefox and Opera and IE users visit the site.
And we know all sorts of things. Like, if you're visiting, like, Slashdot, and then you click on a link on Slashdot that takes you to our site, I see, hey, one person from Slashdot came over to our site. And there's all kinds of stuff that, you know, you can use to figure out who's doing what on your website. It's never exact, but as the number of users you get increase, it's usually about 90% correct. So the amount of effect the error has doesn't, you know, mess with the stats so much.
Wow, that was an interesting way of explaining statistics.
Yeah.
Basically, to sum that up, the more visitors you have, while the individual data are usually inaccurate or useless, in aggregate, the data is actually very useful because statistically all the outliers get eliminated.
Mm-hmm. But if you have like 3 visitors, it's pretty much useless.
Now, if you subscribe to the RSS, we have a normal feed for the site, but we also have the podcast feed, and that's what iTunes looks at.
Mm-hmm.
And we use FeedBurner to do that just because FeedBurner adds all that iTunes-specific BS that you need to get popular in iTunes.
Yep.
And we weren't going to modify our own site to do it, so we basically burn our feed through FeedBurner and then back and then out to you.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to doing all that, it gives us a bunch of statistics. Like, it tells us all the different clients that access the feed and what they use and how often they hit it. We know exactly how many Windows users versus Mac users are subscribed to the RSS.
Awesome.
And, yeah, there are 3 of you out there using the PSP. So kudos to Eric for actually answering our question. To you other 2 bastards, well,
Yep. I don't think they were listening before, because I remember when we checked the first time, they were only 1 person with the PSP.
Yeah. Though Eric seems like a cool guy. He's into robotics and all the stuff that we were into in high school.
Yep, little 16-year-old high school kid from Kansas. Seems pretty cool. Keep listening. And to the rest of you, send cool emails, and we will also respond to them on the show in kind, unless they suck at emails.
No, I think if an email sucks, we'll be more likely to respond to it. You just might not like our response.
Well, quite possibly, but yeah, this is encouragement to be more like Eric here.
Because actually he offered to show us a lot about how the PSP works, because we're not that familiar with him. So we might get some audio feedback from him in the future, maybe a little bit or something.
Yeah, remember, you can always call the voicemail. Do you mean 206-333-1537?
Yeah, see, the secret there is that we actually paused the recording and edited out the part where we fumbled around and looked for the number.
I had it. I didn't have to fumble. I just...
You had to fumble a little bit.
I had it right away, but I didn't know if it was the right one.
Yeah, well, because you had a problem before where you told everyone it wasn't actually the number to call. It was the number of that other audio feedback we got that we haven't played yet.
Yeah, but that's all right. But
yeah,
you can either call that number and leave a message or just record your own MP3 or whatever and then email it to geeknights@gmail.com or put it on your website and then send us a link at geeknights@gmail.com or whatever.
Yeah, we're working on setting up Skype to where if we really want to talk to someone, we'll just do a quick audio conference. We're fine-tuning the details of that, but more to come.
Yeah, I think we'll need a new computer before we can do that.
Yeah. Though in my ever-present quest for a new computer, I accidentally shredded the credit card I was going to use to buy the computer.
Awesome.
Well, I was getting rid of old pieces of paper and old documents, and I was cutting them up, and I saw what I thought was an empty envelope, and I went snip, and I met resistance, and I looked inside to find my old credit card cut in half. Luckily, I called, and I told the credit card company what happened, and they laughed, and they mailed me a new one. So I'm probably going to order a new PC as soon as that thing arrives.
That's not the story you told me. You told me, like, you lost the credit card, or you don't know what happened to it.
No, I know what happened to it. Well, what it was is I didn't want to use it back when I was, you know, poor and in debt. I had 2 credit cards, keep in mind, in college. And because I was poor, I maxed them both out, paying for things like food. One of them I lost, which was fine because I never paid that one back. That's a long story. And maybe we'll do one someday on how you can have awesome credit no matter what you do, because the system's kind of broken. The other one I kept, but it was also maxed out and useless. But that one I paid back down to 0, and I just didn't use it for 2 years after that. And I finally wanted to use it again. And
all right.
So in the news, Google, our wonderful friend, gave the giant finger to the federal government, and I am very pleased with this.
Yep, it shows that even no matter how much we think Google's becoming big and evil, it's still, to this day, not yet. Even though it's definitely still the status of impending doom, it is not yet doom.
Yep.
So rest easily tonight, at least.
I mean, basically what this is back a while ago, the Bush administration tried to push through this Internet Child Protection Act. And among other things, its main thing was that it makes it illegal to provide pornographic content anywhere on the internet without controls in place to make sure minors don't access it.
What if my website is hosted in you know, Kajikistan.
Oh, or, you know, what if your definition of pornography differs from someone else's, or you just happen to have naked pictures of yourself on a website?
Yeah, Flickr has people put up naked pictures.
Plus, considering that there's almost no way to verify someone's age online. I mean, really, no way.
Not at all.
This law is just bullshit, and the Supreme Court thought the same, and they voted almost unanimously to get rid of this law 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And Bush is trying to bring it back.
Good job.
And in order to do so, they've got a task force, and a federal judge requested Google to send them basically every single search that was made on Google over an entire week so that they could assess how much porn is accessible on the internet.
Wow.
Yeah. Google said, and I think it's very succinct and to the point, Google is not a party to this lawsuit, and the demand for the information is overreaching. And they went on to say that they will fight the government's effort, quote, vigorously.
So the do no evil motto still holding up?
Yeah, because it really wouldn't have hurt them to hand the data over. I'm sure they could fairly easily, but I'm glad that they're standing up for my right to search for porn.
Yep, because God knows porn is so hard to find, you need Google to help.
All right, so in the spirit of having things of the day that tick me off a lot more than they entertain you, I got another little bit of Randy that I don't know if you're all familiar with, but you might find entertaining and or scary.
Awesome.
Now, I'm linking to the Wikipedia article involving it because I've actually been involved in heavily editing this article for a number of weeks, and Crackpot seemed to keep unediting it. And it's poorly written to begin with for a number of reasons, so I assure you that the grammar and spelling are not mine. I've mostly added the words supposedly and allegedly and so they claim to this thing more than anything else. But basically, there are a couple of crackpots, Lee Carroll and Jan Tober, who came up with the idea of indigo children.
Does that mean children with, like, skin that is, like, one of the colors of the rainbow?
Oh, see, that would be sane. It turns
really?
Out that, well, first of all, according to these two, well, I'll go with Lee because he's the one who's really the advocate of this. These are magic special children who were born starting in the year 1982, but with increasing frequency, a peaking around 1994. And they're called indigo children because they have a indigo-hued aura. Yeah, aura.
I was born in 82.
Yeah, so was I.
Do I have an aura that's indigo?
I don't know. I'm looking, and your aura kind of looks like pseudoscience to me.
I look at you, and where the aura should be, I see air.
Ah, yeah. I guess we're not indigo children.
Actually, I don't even see the air. I see the wall. What does that mean?
It might mean you're smart.
Oh.
Yeah, now, basically, This is really kind of scary. The more you might look into this, I recommend you read the article if you don't believe that there are a lot of stupid people out there in the world who are trying to destroy everything good and knowledgeable. But basically, these people believe that these children who were born in this time period are magic and special and are either aliens or a hybrid alien or maybe they're messiahs. But the basic thing is that they're gifted. They come into this world, and they're here to save us from all evil and usher in a new era. But in actuality, they're most likely just normal kids with possibly ADHD. And this is just a system that allows parents who have a troubled child to believe that that child is somehow gifted or special, when in fact that child just needs professional help.
Oh, that's what this is about.
Yeah, so a parent will have a child who, you know, is maybe not the brightest kid, or they're having a lot of trouble in school. And instead of, you know, helping the kid learn, they'll decide that the child is an indigo child and that they're actually a genius. They're just misunderstood. And that to send them to a normal school would be a crime. And thus they send them to these special schools. And it's a lot like Xavier's School for the Gifted if mutants didn't exist. Yeah, these are some crazy nut jobs. And I guess the scary part about this is that there are tens and hundreds of thousands of people around the world who believe in this. There are actual scientists who, for some reason, think this is legitimate.
Really?
So I guess they're not really scientists. They're just crackpots. But just look around. Look at this Wikipedia. Follow some of those links. And that's all I got to say about this, because I'll just get angry and go on a rant if I keep going.
Well, you know what? Even if this Indigo thing was true, I think it's pretty obvious that the parents are a little special. And they should go to a special school. So again, my thing of the day is not something, you know, it's something fun and normal. Well, not so normal, but it's fun and happy. So there are lots of generators for various things all over the internet.
Haha, I'm generating a picture of the haha guy saying something.
Yeah. Well, I found one recently that allows you to generate a character in the Simpsons style. You can select a head, an eyeball, a nose, a hair, a body, glasses, extras, which is really just facial hair or facial lipstick or something, and you can change the scene.
Now, when Scott showed this to me, the first thing I did when I looked at it was I took a very feminine head and matched it up with the ugliest man body I could find. And then when we got home, I discovered that Scott had taken the manliest head and matched it up with the most feminine body he could find. And I found that amusing.
Yeah, that's pretty much the first thing anyone's going to do with it. There's not much you can, you know, that's the funnest thing you can do with it anyways. But you can do all sorts of other cool things. You could try to make a Simpson, like, what would you look like if you were a Simpson? You could go for that. You know, it's a lot of fun.
Huh? It's not, can you make an Indigo child?
No.
So, it being Thursday, we're continuing with part two of our ongoing series on how to attend conventions. Anime cons, gaming cons, what have you. And last week we talked mostly about, you know, the planning stages, actually driving there, deciding if you want to go, all that sort of thing.
The stuff you do before the actual con. Pre-con.
Now we're hitting up on at-con, what you actually do from the moment you arrive until the moment you depart.
I don't know how far we'll actually make it, but we'll go until time runs out.
Yep. Because the first thing is you'll arrive into town however you arrived, and depending on if you drove or flew or took a train, you'll have to deal with various different obstacles.
Yeah, if you took a train or a plane, you got to get to your hotel somehow. And if you have a friend, that's real easy. If you don't have a friend that's, you know, already there with a car, you're going to need to take a taxi, maybe a light rail, something. But you better figure it out and make haste with it, or you could be sitting at the airport/train station for quite a while.
Luckily, most airport train stations have very good taxi services to all surrounding hotels.
Yep, you just say, take me to this hotel, and you go.
Though if you're driving in, it's not a concern unless you go to the super, super big conventions. Most cons are just free parking or you park at the hotel, whatever. But if you go to Otakon, we'll use Otakon as the example just because it's the big, big, big con we go to. Parking is hellishly expensive. As in, the hotel parking at the hotel we stay at is $20 a night.
So if you get there, let's say Thursday morning, it's Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, $60.
Yeah.
That's not, you know, it's not super expensive. I mean, we can afford it, but a lot of poor geeks can't. And it's you can buy a video game, man, and have change left over.
I mean, I guess the moral of this story is just know how much parking is going to cost and leave that money aside. Because we barely made it out of our first Otakon.
Yeah.
They're scrapping together what little money we had left to buy gas to pay for parking.
It's kind of rough.
Of course, this most recent year, we actually got away almost scot-free entirely by accident because we lost the little slip of paper that said how long we were in the garage.
I don't think we actually lost it, but it was lost in the car.
Yeah, I couldn't find it.
And when we drove up, you know, we said we lost our slip of paper. He said, well, how long have you been parked here? We said, you know, a night. And we
actually, I don't think the guy was asking. Either he just wanted a bribe and then he let us out, or he didn't speak English.
Mm-hmm.
We're not sure, but we gave him $20 and he let us go.
Yeah, so we ended up saving a whole lot of money by luck.
Yeah.
But now we're going to do it on purpose.
Yeah, so I guess after this coming Otakon, we'll be able to tell you whether or not you can get away with paying almost nothing for parking.
Yep, because we'll definitely, you know, be willing to pay the full price if they catch us and they don't let us get off with that trick, but it might work.
Now, actually arriving, the first thing you want to do, no matter what, I don't care whether you're registering or what, go to the hotel and check in first, even if your check-in time isn't until later in the day.
Usually you can get checked in as soon as the hotel has your room ready. The check-in time, the hotel officially states, is the time when all the rooms are ready for getting in no matter what. So depending on where your room is, the hotel, it's pretty much a crapshoot whether you can get in early or not.
Also, how early you arrive. Like, we go to Otakon, we arrive Thursday morning. So we check in at like 11 a.m., and they usually have some rooms ready, and they just give them to us right away.
Yep.
And the earlier you check in, the more likely you'll be able to choose where your rooms are in the hotel if you have a preference or anything like that.
Yeah, if they didn't already decide that when you made your reservation.
And they'll also likely have more spare keys available if you need more than a few.
Yeah, because it's not like the olden days where there were so many physical keys per room. Now they're key cards that they program, so they have a stack of spare ones. And, you know, if you ask for two extra, they take two spare ones and they program them for your room. And eventually they run out of those, so...
Now, I highly recommend, if you can, that you ask for early check-in when you reserve the hotel room. Because most hotels offer it free of charge, even if they don't say they do. And all that means is they'll make sure your room's ready long before the check-in time.
That means you can dump off all your stuff in your hotel room at real early in the morning when you show up, and then go do stuff!
But now, talking about the hotel room, I promised last week that I'd give a nice, succinct guide on how to overstuff a hotel room, because it's technically illegal and against the hotel's policies.
But overstuffing is pretty much absolutely necessary for a convention. If you pay for the actual number of rooms it would take to legally house, you know, like 20 people, you have to be like a rich guy.
Well, actually, only if you're going to a big con like Otakon. Otakon and Katsukon have the most expensive hotel rooms. Mm. But, like, OhioCon, it was like $90 a night for the room. It didn't matter.
You know, but still, $90, you know, it adds up. You know, even if it was $90 a night, I'd rather have six people in the room than, you know, the limit of four.
See, I used to feel that way, but, like, when I went to Katsukon, even though the hotel room was expensive, I'd gone to so many cons where I overstuffed the room. It was real nice to share a room with just two other guys.
Oh, yeah.
I paid out the ass for it.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, there's a list of things and tricks that you have to do because the hotel knows you're overstuffing. Don't think for a second that they don't know exactly what you're planning, especially if you're at a con. The thing is, they won't screw you and they won't go out of their way to find you out unless you really give them a hard time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of an open secret. The rule number one, everyone must bring their own towels. Because if you get a room that's an occupancy of four people, it's going to have four towels in it. If you request, you know, eight more towels, they're going to be suspicious.
The other thing is the towels they give you are really small, so even if you try to use them, someone who's normal size, like what, we're like almost 6 feet tall, yeah. I have to use two of those hotel towels.
That's just because you use a giant freak towel.
A giant awesome towel.
Yeah.
Bring your own towel.
Yeah, bring your own towel, and if you have extra people, bring your own pillows, blankets, all the extras.
Mm-hmm.
All the stuff that you might need that you would otherwise ask for the hotel.
The awesome people get dibs on beds.
Generally, that's the one perk, because we've been talking about how difficult it is and time-consuming and frustrating to actually manage this for all your friends. The main perk is that if you do all this, you're pretty much guaranteed a bed because you did it. You can just kick people out of your room if they don't comply.
Yep.
Now, rule number two. Do not ever request anything extra from the hotel.
You don't want room service. You don't even want the rollaway bed. You want nothing.
Yeah, especially never ask for the rollaway bed.
They often charge for the rollaway bed.
Yes, ask for the rollaway bed, they'll come into your room and they might see, you know, 10 sets of bags where there should only be four.
Mm-hmm. The other thing is, normally when you go on vacation, your hotel room is full of, like, your clothes and your toiletries. So you can let room service, you know, not room service, that's ordering food, housekeeping, come in and clean up all you want. But at a con, your room is full of, like, drinks, snacks, toys, con goodies.
Extra people.
Con badges, all kinds of crazy shit, and it's just a mess everywhere, and you really don't want housekeeping touching anything.
So that's rule number three. Do not ever request housekeeping, and make sure you put the Do Not Disturb thing on your doorknob 24/7.
Yep, never let it get off there. And if there isn't a Do Not Disturb thingy in your room, go ask for one at the desk.
Or make one.
Yeah. Don't call them up and say, bring me one. Go down to the desk and say, can I have a Do Not Disturb sign? That way they don't come in your room and look.
Yep. Now, rule number three is don't have everyone go up to the desk when you check in. If you walk up to a desk with nine people and you say, checking into room for DeCoster, occupancy two, they're going to know.
Mm-hmm.
Have one guy go check in and then meet everyone at the room. or go up to the room in stages or something. You're smart. Figure it out.
Yeah, don't. Generally, it doesn't matter unless you travel in a big group because people show up at all kinds of different times. So those people just show up and be like, hey, what room are you in? And they go in the elevator and no one knows. And maybe one person shows up at a time, maybe two at a time. But if you show up with 10 people at a time, you have to buffer it. You know, stay in the parking garage and then go up, you know, into the elevators. Or just send one person up to get the keys, then have that person come down and get everyone else.
Yep. Now, getting the keys. Don't ask for more keys than the room's occupancy. Mm-hmm. So if you have a room with an occupancy of 4, you can safely ask for 3 extra keys, but don't ask for 8. It's kind of obvious why.
Usually the hotels will give you 2 keys by default.
Yeah.
And 2 might be all you need.
It's always good to have extras, but you got to make sure you keep track of them.
Oh, I forgot. We're assuming that you're getting normal rooms with 2 double beds, which is 2 queen-size beds, which is for 4 people.
Yes. In fact, you should probably request that, because usually it's interchangeable between 2 double beds or 2 queen... Usually it's 2 queen beds or 1 king bed.
Yeah.
Are your choices.
You want two queen bedrooms, and you want as many adjacent rooms as you're going to need.
Yeah, most people only get one room, but if you're like us, and you start making awesome, and all your friends start wanting to stay with you, we get 2-3 rooms, and with the early check-in, we're assured that we'll get 3 rooms in a row. Because, basically, think of it this way. Shower space is pretty much the only reason for this, and also keys. If you have 8 people in one room, that's 8 people who share 1 bathroom and 1 shower and 4 keys. If you have 16 people in 2 rooms, and the rooms are adjacent, now you have 2 bathrooms that can be used simultaneously between the 2 rooms.
Because you leave the doors that connect the rooms together open at all times. So any key to one room is a key to both of the rooms. You see?
So if you ever go in a big group, unless you're going for a suite or something, just get rooms that are adjacent. You'll save money, and it'll make your overstuffing experience a lot better.
Yeah, a suite is something completely different. I can only recommend you get a suite if you're going to have a party. You know, otherwise, it's just kind of silly.
Yeah. Now, my general recommendation is that you can probably take the occupancy of a room plus 3 people comfortably. Mm-hmm. Unless it's like a Days Inn or something crappy. Now, if you have adjacent rooms, you can add 2 extra people per adjacency, basically. So you could say you've got 4 occupancy rooms. You could have 7 people per room, fine. But if you've got the door between them open, you can fit a couple extra people in addition to that fairly easily.
Now, it also depends on the kind of people you're bringing. If you're bringing, let's say you're bringing like 10 giant fat people, or you're bringing, you know, a bunch of high maintenance teenage girls, you're going to need to lower your estimates a little bit on how many you can fit in there.
Yeah. Now, this is the rule. We're beyond the rules that'll prevent you from getting caught. Here's the rule that you really need to remember. Now, I recommend, first off, don't worry about other people following this rule. Follow it yourself. Even if you're not running the room, if you're just in it, and then worry about other people. But keep your shit together. I mean, when you get into the room, pick a small area, put all your bags there, and state to the world that that is your spot. And make sure everything you own in the world that is at this convention with you is in that spot at all times when it is not on your person.
Yeah, you can't tell you how many times people run around, where's my con badge? Where's the piece of my costume? Where's that plushie I bought? Where's this? Where's that? Where's my toothbrush? Oh my God. You keep it all together in one spot and just don't mess around with it and you'll be okay.
Yep. Now, your friends may suck and not do this, but as long as you do it and you keep their stuff out of your stuff, it'll make your life 1,000 times easier.
And then, because if you're the guy who's got the room, then when everyone checks out, you go around the room and you pick everything up that looks good and everything else just leave there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't believe the things that our friends leave in their rooms when, because we usually check out, like, we walk out of the room last, and there's just stuff everywhere, like underwear, socks, shoes, bathing suits, towels. Everyone forgets their toiletries. I think there were, like, 5 bottles of shampoo in one of our rooms last year.
Wow. That was the most ever.
Yeah, like, everyone left their shampoo.
Yikes. All right, so I think that's about it for the hotel.
Yep. And we've already talked last time about when you distribute the keys, make sure you distribute the keys in a way that lets the people who need to go to the room the most often go to it without bothering you.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we already talked about registration, whether you should pre-register or register at the con, but the next thing you want to do is get your badge as soon as possible. Now, even if it's a little tiny con, the sooner you get the badge, the sooner you can have fun at the con.
Now, if it's a little con, don't worry about it. Just get in line and whatever. Yep. If it's a big con like Otakon, bring water, bring your DS or PSP, bring all your friends and stand in line together, and be prepared to wait.
Now, you want to check the weather. Because if you're going to be outside, which is a pretty good chance you're going to be waiting outside, there might be rain, you need an umbrella. It might be crazy hot. Don't wear your furry cosplay in the crazy heat.
Yeah, in fact, don't cosplay until you've gotten the hotel room and you're in it and you have a chance to shower and relax a little.
It's okay to do like a light cosplay, like let's say you have a funny hat.
Yeah, or you got a Full Metal Alchemist uniform that's actually real clothing and is comfortable, like you wore it in the car on the way there.
Yeah, but if you have the typical cosplay, like, you know, I don't know, a Koopa Troopa with his giant turtle shell, you don't want to wait in line with the giant turtle shell on you.
It'll suck ass, and you won't look good because you'll be sweaty and miserable and frowning the whole time, and no one will care about your cosplay.
There are enough cosplays in line, and there's enough time to do cosplay the rest of the con. You don't need to wait outside for 2 hours in the cosplay.
Now, also, regarding the cosplay, and as our friend Kat noted in the forums, if you're going to cosplay, make sure your cosplay is done before the con.
I can't tell you how many times I've seen sewing machines at cons, people working on costumes while they're there.
Now, it's good to have a sewing machine if you're a cosplayer, because if your costume breaks, like right before the masquerade...
Oh, then you can fix it, sure.
But if you're spending more than half your time at the con making a new costume, you've got issues.
I remember I saw in Artist Alley once, people were selling, like, emergency cosplay repair kits.
Yeah.
You might want to test your cosplay before the con to make sure it doesn't fall apart, you know, with, you know, it doesn't have to go through intense, like, brawling activity, but, like, run around in it and see if it falls apart, unless it's the kind that, you know it can't, but...
Yep. Now, if it's a really, really complex cosplay that's not going to last long and you know that... Don't wear it Friday morning when no one's in the con yet because they're all in line. Wait until Friday night or Saturday afternoon when the most people are going to see it. Get the most bang for your buck. You worked hard on that costume.
And if it's a really, really good costume, you're not going to be moving much in it. You're pretty much going to go into the biggest open space and stand there.
God, I never really cosplayed on purpose before. Like, I was on Fans View twice because I didn't shave and I was scruffy and I was wearing a tie and I was hot, so I pulled my collar open. And they took a picture of me. They thought I was Kaji from Eva. Mm-hmm. But other than that, we'd never cosplayed before in our lives. And this past year, we decided to get all our friends and dress up as the Axe Gang from Kung Fu Hustle. And let me tell you, cosplayers, I have a whole new load of respect for you people. How do you deal with it?
I mean, I'm trying to go do my con business, right? And I'm just wearing a costume for fun. And then people just say, stop, I want to take a picture. And as soon as one person has the balls to actually ask you to stop, 100 people who didn't have the balls will stop and try to take a picture of you, and you'll end up standing there for minutes and minutes and minutes as people just keep taking pictures. And it's like, all right, I have stuff to do. I'm actually a con attendee here.
Yep. You'll have to deal with, like, this may sound silly, but if you're at an anime con especially, you're really going to have to deal with, like, prepubescent girls running up to you from behind and hugging you.
That's not cool.
Yeah, just be wary. There are going to be girls who are going to try to jump all over you if you're dressing up.
So you only want to dress up at times and you don't want to do anything else.
Yep.
Or if you have a costume that, you know, no one will really care about or bug you about.
Because we cosplayed for about half the day and then we couldn't deal with it anymore and we had to change out of our costumes. We were glad they were popular, but we couldn't actually do anything at the con.
Yeah, so if you're like a normal sailor, scout, whatever, just who cares, but... Unless it's a really good one. If you happen to be a really amazing Sailor Moon or something, then you might want to only do it when nothing else is happening.
Now, regarding cosplay, and once again, all this cosplay stuff applies mostly to anime cons, because...
No, you'd be surprised. All right, There's a lot of costuming at other cons.
Yeah, not to stereotype, but if you go to a gaming con, most of the people who cosplay are real scary.
Yup, that's for sure.
At anime, but... I guess if you've never been to an anime con, cosplay is much more accepted. Most people, not most people, but a lot of people do it. I'd say at least half the people do it. And there's not that stigma, and it's not just fat old guys dressed like Sailor Bubba.
Yeah, like at comic conventions, there'll be cosplay, like people dressed up as superheroes, but it's only like a few freaks. It's not like, you know, a thing that everyone does. At anime cons, it's weird because if not half, then more than half of the people are doing it.
And but a lot of the people who do it are very normal, cool people. They're not creepy at all.
Yeah, and it ranges from stuff like a guy with, like, a sword to, like, someone dressed up as a giant Pikachu, you know, or crazy, crazy stuff.
I mean, there are people who you could consider professional cosplayers out there.
Those are the scary people.
Because I actually stayed in a room with a bunch of those types way back when I went to Anime Central. And we stayed in the presidential suite with like 20 people, and it was a crazy party. And all the girls who had the room were like super pro cosplayers, to the point that they made an entire intricate, beautiful costume from scratch Friday night so they could wear it Saturday.
Wow.
Yeah. So if you've never been to an anime con, check it out just to see the cosplays. They're actually really impressive.
All right. So the next thing you do, you've got your badge, you've got your con packet. What do you do? Well, the first thing, I think I posted on this on the forum, but I'll say it again here. You look at the con schedule, and there are things in the con schedule that will be so awesome and so amazing that you cannot possibly miss them. But there won't be so many of these things. There'll maybe be two or three. Guarantee to yourself that you will do those things no matter what.
And don't commit to anything else.
Don't commit to anything else at all.
We're not saying don't do anything else, but don't commit to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, agree with all your friends, all right, I'm going to this because it's going to be crazy, and I'm going to this because it's going to be crazy, and you'll all meet and do it. But the rest of the time, just wander around and do whatever strikes your fancy or whatever happens.
I mean, if you try to open up the con schedule and say, I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do that, all right, well, you know what's going to happen? That's going to be canceled. That's going to move to a different room, and you'll get lost for a half hour. You'll get caught in a sea of traffic going to that. You know, there'll be a cool thing you'll stop to look at on your way to that. You know, who knows? Your plan will be totally shot to hell. It doesn't work. Don't even bother. Just at any moment during the con, if you're not entertained enough, then you open up the schedule. You say, what's going on right now? And you go for what you think is going to be good right at that moment. Unless one of your very, very few committed activities is occurring, in which case, you usually want to prepare for those ahead of time. Like, you know.
Yep, and I found this advice applies to really small conventions and really large conventions pretty much equally.
Because
I've been to some very, very small cons that had like two event rooms and like one tiny dealer's room. And even then, there's one or two events that you want to go to, and the rest of the fun is really just kind of ad hoc, and it comes randomly, and you really can't prepare for it or expect it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you try to schedule out your whole day, you're going to end up missing out on a lot of fun.
I mean, how many times do you look at the schedule and you say, gee, you know, I don't know if I want to go to this or if I want to go to that. That looks fun. I'm not sure. And the description in the con book isn't always very helpful.
Yeah. Like, we're not sure what it was to this day, but we saw an event at a con I went to called Hentai Hot Tub.
Mm-hmm.
And we weren't sure what that meant. We know what hentai is. We know what a hot tub is. But the two together, we were curious enough to try to figure out what the hell it was. But the con book didn't really give us any information other than the time, and it didn't actually say where it was either.
Maybe it was just made up.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
But here's a good example that comes to mind. At Otakon last year, there was the Great Teacher Largo panel.
Oh, we thought that was going to be so awesome.
We weren't sure exactly. Was he going to show up? Because he's a cool guy. Or
yeah,
was
this going to
be some Mega Tokyo fanboy thing? Or what the hell was it going to be? And, you know, we didn't say, all right, we're definitely going to that. But on Sunday, when the time came for it, we said, all right, what do we want to do? And we looked, and that was there, and there were some other things. So we said, all right, we'll go look at it. We went there, and 5 minutes into it, there was an annoying kid, and nothing happened, and it kind of sucks.
Was that kid a guy or a girl?
I don't know.
It was just this annoying kid.
Annoying kid.
Like, super fanboy, and followed us around, and we barely escaped with our lives.
Yeah. It's good to meet people at conventions, new people. That's in fact, most of the fun is meeting all kinds of cool people.
Yeah, I mean, I have friends that are con friends that I see them at multiple cons every year, and I'm very close to them, but that's the only way I know them is through the conventions.
Mm-hmm. But if some annoying person comes up to you, like some fanboy, and starts talking to you, it's okay to just, you know, make them go away, because they're only going to make your time at the con painful.
Now, if you're a polite person or you have trouble brushing people off like that, a real good trick is to have a fake AIM name ready, because eventually they'll ask you what your AIM name is, they can catch up with you later. Just lie. Just lie straight up, and then you'll never see him again. The con's so big, it won't matter. Or the con's so small, you're screwed because they'll follow you around for the whole con. But
another good idea is to team up with someone who can brush them off. You know, a lot of times if, you know, there'll be a nerdy guy who's trying to bother you, but you're hanging out with someone who he, like, is kind of afraid of going near, even though he really wants to get close to you. But as long as you stay close to that safety person, it's sort of like a repelling magnet. You can keep them away.
Now, at the same time, don't push people away automatically, because you'll meet a lot of cool people, like we said.
Oh, yeah. Only brush someone away if they're like a super annoying fan person that's just painful to stand next to.
Like if a big old fat guy comes over and starts telling you about his hentai collection, brush him off.
Or if a little nerdy kid comes up and says, oh my god, DDR, blah, 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 I can get this on this song, I can get this on this song, oh my god, I beat this song on this film. You say, all right, shut up and go away.
But if you run into, say, us, if you say hey, we'll say hey, and we'll probably end up going to the AMV contest together.
Yeah, if you say Leroy, we say Jenkins.
Actually, that we went to Otakon, and just so you know, we yelled Leroy, and in fact, an entire crowd of people screamed Jenkins back.
Yeah, there are certain things you can do at cons, sort of like a litmus test to tell if people are cool, you know, and that's sort of like a really weak one, is to say Leroy and see if they say Jenkins. Because if they say Jenkins, that means that, you know, they're cool, happening on the internet type of people. You know
I mean,
that
it depends
much.
On what kind of con it is and who you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Well, if it's at like, BotCon, you can say like, what's that thing the Transformers say? The little internet, the universal.
I don't even remember.
Thing for peace.
Yeah, you know what? Because I've seen that movie so many times, but that universal peace thing is so complicated, I've never memorized it.
It's like
it.
Chub Niffy something.
Yeah.
I don't even remember.
Neither do I.
If I see it, I'll go, oh, that's what that... I recognize it immediately. But yeah, if you say that kind of thing, you know, it all depends on the con.
I mean, but the main thing to remember is that while anime cons and gaming cons and all these different geeky cons are all like a different subset of geekery, we're kind of leaving out the trade conventions a little bit here, but they're all geeks, and a lot of geeks have similar interests. And they may not be super in... Like, you're at an anime con, there's a good chance you'll find some Linux geeks or some gaming geeks and hang out with them independent of the anime.
Yeah, you know, I actually didn't watch really any anime at all at Otakon. I did so few anime-related activities, actually, other than buying anime merchandise. It was scary.
Yeah, I mean, one of the highlights was seeing Entertainment System, the band, play NES songs for us in a little concert.
Mm-hmm. That was one of the things we committed to.
Yeah. And you know what? It was worth it.
Definitely worth it. So, eating at the con is sort of tricky depending on where the con is at.
Now, if it's a small con, it really doesn't matter. You don't have to worry about it at all. Because every small con I've gone to, basically, everyone just gets together, and then they either go out because there's a million restaurants nearby, or they order a pizza and have it delivered to the hotel. I mean, at UberCon, there were literally like 100 pizzas delivered to the hotel under various names over the course of the evening on Saturday.
You never want to eat in the hotel or convention center, ever.
Yes, that goes
unless
doubly
it's
so.
Free food provided by the convention itself.
Yeah, Anime Central used to have the most awesome thing. I don't know if they still do it, but basically they had a green room that had infinite free food. And by infinite free food, I mean actual food, like sandwiches with meat and cheese on them, and chips and crackers and soda and fruit and drinks. It was absolutely free to anyone who went to the con. You could go to Anime Central and not spend a dime on food and not die.
Also, most cons provide free water, so never buy bottled water, ever.
Yeah. But make sure you have money for food. Make sure your group either has a way to get in touch or has a planned time to meet for dinner. Don't worry so much about lunch because you're all going to be doing different things anyway. And trying to it takes a long time to organize a group to go out for dinner.
I usually just take... You know, as many people as I can get right now. And then we go, okay, good, let's eat.
Yep, like, because our total group of people that we knew at the con was like 30 or 40 people.
Mm-hmm.
And we always organize the crazy dinners, because it takes about an hour to gather a group of that size, get them together, get them all to agree on a restaurant, drag them all there, sit them all down, and then finally start eating.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to do that three times a day.
Not
so over lunch, like, me and Scott and like five or six other people would all find each other and go eat. And then while we're eating, we'd see, like, half of our group come in to eat just as we're leaving. We kind of trade off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the other thing is, you have to know the food places in the area. I remember the first Otakon, I didn't really realize that the walkway went to the little mini mall with the, you know, food court.
Yep, I walked across the street to this other crap mall, and all they had was pizza, and it was bad pizza.
Yeah. So make sure before you eat to ask either people at the con or con staff or someone where the food is at.
If it's a hotel or you're in a hotel, the concierge will always know good restaurants, and they're usually very polite about it. And if you're really worried about money, you can give them a dollar range, and they'll be very good and give you restaurants that you can afford. Mm-hmm. Don't be afraid to ask.
Yeah, and even if you ask like people in the hotel, they won't just say, eat in the restaurant at the hotel all the time.
They'll usually say, don't eat here.
Yeah, they'll actually help you out. And you don't want to eat at a sit-down restaurant unless it's like dinner at night.
Yeah, I mean, we did that. We dragged everyone to a Japanese sushi place. We took, like, the entire back room.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of difficult to pull off, so don't worry about that so much.
If you're going to eat breakfast, because I really don't eat breakfast at a con, I'll just buy, like, an orange juice in a bottle and drink it, and that's it. But if you're going to eat breakfast, eat it before the con opens in the morning. Just because why waste precious con time when you don't have to?
Your best bet is to buy a bunch of cheapo Enemans donuts or something. Just keep them in the room.
Yeah, that's another good plan.
Our friend Nuri brought cheese Danish that was most excellent, and that kept us going at Otakon.
Mm-hmm. For lunch, you generally want to find a time in the middle of the day when there's not much happening at the con, and you want to eat somewhere food court style, or, you know, maybe even fast food, even though I never eat fast food
anymore. Well, the key is eat something. A lot of people forget to eat at these conventions. I'm not kidding.
Yeah. Or some people are, you know, fat and eat too much. But don't forget to eat because you will totally be burnt out. You'll sleep too much. You'll miss con. You'll feel bad. You know, remember to eat.
Yep. And corollary to that, stay hydrated. Convention centers, especially larger ones, use cooling systems because even though it may be winter at your con, the air in that convention center is so dry, it is sucking the life out of you. You will dehydrate twice as fast as you expect. Drink water constantly.
I just go around drinking free water. Like, anytime I see one, I drink, like, 3 glasses.
It's not so much a concern at small conventions, but, like, Otakon or Anime Expo, drink water. I'm not even kidding.
It's pretty, especially if you're doing one of those crazy cosplays. I don't know how those people do it, you know. I mean, now, I'd freaking need like a camel pack in there.
That or people are in the DDR tournaments or people at the dances at cons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'll get to the dances. But along the lines of remembering to eat and remembering to drink, for the love of God, take a goddamn shower.
Yeah. Don't, you know, if you wake up like, I don't know, 5 minutes before the con opens, right, and it's something you really wanted to do, but you smell like ass and you feel dirty, it doesn't matter. Take a shower.
Yeah, I mean, this shouldn't be a problem, and it's not just anime cons. Gaming cons are even worse, and sci-fi cons are worse still. I don't know what it is, but these people just don't have basic hygiene, and it's not cool.
It's all right, because cons are starting to crack down on that sort of thing.
Yeah, actually, Otakon, I'm very pleased with, is bit by bit introducing policies to where if you smell bad, you've got to leave.
Yeah, so don't be the guy who smells bad and has to leave.
If you're not sure if you smell bad, ask someone.
There are drugstores every freaking 2 blocks in the United States and Canada. There is no reason that you can't go to one and get some deodorant, because your only excuse is that you left it at home.
Yeah, and the thing is, if you're going to take part in the DDR tournament at 5 a.m. or like 10 a.m. in the morning on Saturday, take a shower before you continue with the rest of your con experience.
And then take a shower after. Oh,
yeah.
Before the DDR tournament and after it.
Just take showers, because I swear to God, if I run into another smelly fanboy, I'm just going to kill him.
Yeah. There's nothing worse than, like, you're in the dealer's room, and you want to buy something on a table, and you're trying to get close to the table to take a look at it. And you have to squeeze in next to some guy who's, like, wet and slimy and nasty, and it's like, all right, now I'm not buying that. You know?
Now, one aspect that a lot of people forget about when they go with a big group to a con is communication between group members.
Mm.
It's not as much of an issue as it used to be. Like, we used to bring radios.
It's a
me, Luigi.
Hey, don't think about it.
We have a story to tell. A little bit of an inside joke.
Inside a joke? A story about Mario and Luigi on the walkie-talkies.
All right, so before cell phones were completely ubiquitous, our first convention, OhioCon.
Two.
Yeah, the second OhioCon we went to. And cell phones were pretty widespread.
They were ubiquitous. We didn't have them.
Yeah, we didn't have cell phones. In fact, no one in our group had a cell phone.
Wow.
And we got there, and because we ran the RIT Anime Club, we took the like walkie-talkies from the club vault and brought them with us because, you know, we have that privilege, whatever. So we had all these walkie-talkies, and we discovered that a lot of other people at this con had the same walkie-talkies with the same frequency bands.
Or at least other walkie-talkies that on the same frequency.
And we also discovered that one channel, I forget which one it was the staff/security coordination channel. So we're sitting there, and then I don't know which one of us started. It was either me or Scott. But we picked it up, and one of us was like into the microphone in a random channel where some other people were talking. It's me, Mario.
Hello. And this is looking not so good.
And then we started doing Luigi. And then other people who heard this started doing it too. And the walkie-talkies that everyone had brought to this con became useless. It just became a flood of Marios and Luigis yelling crap at each other. To the point that the security people were like, we can't use these anymore. Backup plan, backup plan. And they stopped using the walkie-talkies.
Mm-hmm.
It was hilarious.
There's nothing better than picking it up and being like, hello, is Mario there? I cannot find him. And they'd be like,
but now everyone just has cell phones. Make sure everyone has each other's numbers, and make sure that don't expect that anyone's going to answer your phone, because if you call someone, odds are they don't notice it ringing until an hour later. So never expect quick communication.
Mm-hmm. Unless you have those Nextel phones that do the walkie-talkie thing.
Even then,
someone won't feel it vibrating. They'll be busy and they can't pick it up. They'll be watching a movie. They won't want to pick it up. They won't hear it ring. Just don't worry about it.
If you're the caller, call someone once. If they don't answer, call someone else or don't worry about it. You're not going to get a hold of them.
Yeah, most of the time when you're calling, you're looking for people to group up or you're trying to figure out where people are. And maybe in the future we'll have awesome GPS technology. You'll know exactly where everyone is just looking at a little screen.
And if you're calling people to organize dinner, it's already too late. You had to coordinate the dinner long before it's time to gather.
Yeah, if it's a sitting down dinner, you have to, take care of that way earlier. You have to say early in the morning when everyone's still in the hotel room, all right, everyone, remember, and this will be the third time you're reminding them, by the way, tonight at 8, we're all going to meet here and then decide in a restaurant. If you're not there at 8, you're not going.
Now, if you're the one receiving calls, especially us in the case, or if you're the person who's running this room or you're the one coordinating everything, just look at your phone periodically and see all the missed messages and then call back the people who deserve calls back.
Yeah, I make it a note that whenever I enter or leave an event at the con, I always just look at the phone, mostly to see what time it is, but also to see if anyone left me a voicemail.
Yep. And make sure you have some predefined meeting places. Pick a few places where you can meet that are obvious and you'll be able to find each other. Mm-hmm. Again, not so much a concern at small cons, but large cons, it's critical.
Very critical.
Because if you call, and make sure it's a place where you can actually find the person.
Make sure it's a place everyone actually knows, because a lot of times you'd be like, all right, everyone meet here, and people will go right, and they'll all go someplace different, because they're all dumb.
Or they'll all meet somewhere, and the place you specified is a giant auditorium with a movie playing full of people.
Yeah.
Great.
You usually want to pick an outdoors location that's not crowded, that is sort of a little ways from the con.
And if you go to Otakon, don't pick the freaking fountains, because everyone's trying to meet everyone at the fountains.
Fountain's bad.
Yeah. Plus all the cosplayers are there constantly.
We usually pick sculptures or any sort of landmark is always good.
Now, almost all cons have a dealer's room. And this will be pivotal to your experience at a con if you've never been to a con before.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just to give you an example, Otakon, the dealer's room is, 11 football fields?
It's not 11 football fields.
It was 9 football fields, right?
I thought it was 4 or 5.
No, it was 9 at least. It was
huge. It doesn't matter. It's very, very
large.
You can't see from one end to the other. I mean, it was about as big as more than one whole room at the Jacob Javits Center. Very large.
Now, basically to sum up, make sure you have money to pay for gas and everything home. Don't spend all your money in the dealer's room. 2, you probably want to pay with credit cards, because they'll all the dealers will take it, even at little crap cons, and you don't want to be carrying wads of cash around in a sea of people.
Yeah, but sometimes, one time I tried to buy a Gundam with a credit card, and they accepted it, but I had to go to another booth and pay there, and it was a pain in the ass. So have cash also. But to make sure you can make it home, have enough cash to make it home and leave it in your hotel room in a safe spot so you can't possibly spend it.
Furthermore, and this is kind of an aside, but ATMs and cash. bring cash with you to the con and keep it in the room or something. Or if you don't have it with you yet, get it immediately from an ATM.
And make as few withdrawals from ATMs as possible, because near convention centers, the ATM fees are insane.
Well, not only that, more importantly,
I don't pay ATM fees, but other people do.
Yeah, whatever. Your bank kind of sucks.
My bank's awesome.
Using ATMs is important more because the ATMs within a several mile radius of any large con will be completely empty by Friday night.
And no one fills those things on the weekends.
I was actually at a con, Anime Central, where it was time to pay the lady for the suite. So I owed her like $80. And I figure, all right, fine. I go down to the ATM and I try to get money out. And it's empty. And I now have no way of paying this woman.
Sucks.
Yeah. I ended up writing her a check, which I felt bad about.
Yeah, I don't write checks so much.
Yeah.
Another thing is, you generally want to have a dealer's room strategy. Like, if it's a little tiny dealer's room at a tiny con, don't worry about it. Just go in there once or twice and look over everything and buy anything you really want. And on Sunday, you can probably... Well, on the last day of any convention, any dealer is usually trying to sell, you know, a whole bunch of stuff at the last minute.
Crazy deals.
You can probably get a crazy deal if you're savvy.
Our friend Scott Johnson is probably the Mac master of this.
Yeah.
We don't know how he does it, but Sunday, he just went into the dealer's room on his own, and he walked out with, like, a sack full of various goodies, and it cost him almost nothing.
Yeah, he comes up to us, and he's like, here's all the DVDs I got at the con, and he's got this, like, tower. It's like a 5 foot tall, well, not like 5 feet, but like a 2.5 foot tall tower of DVDs. And he's like, yep, I got 40 DVDs here. Cost me, 40 DVDs. It usually costs, times 20, $800. He's like, yep, I paid like $150 for this. And you're like, holy damn.
Granted, he's got a lot of bad anime as a result of this.
Yeah, but, you know.
But also the goodies. He gets every little goodie for nothing.
Mm-hmm. Also, there's a lot of free stuff they give away in dealers' rooms often.
Well, only really at large cons. I mean, I didn't get crap at KatsuCon.
Oh, yeah. But when they give away free stuff, you want to go have a time when you're about to go to your hotel room, go in, collect every free thing that you want at all, and then bring it back to your hotel room, because carrying it around the con sucks.
That goes for buying things, too. If you're buying anything big, buy it before you go into the room.
Mm-hmm.
Now, also, don't buy things that you can get outside of the con, because you'll probably pay a lot more.
Yeah, be smart. If you see something in the convention center that you can buy online or you can buy in another store, there's no reason to buy it there.
The worst thing are those freaking swords. Every con now, they'll have one or two guys selling, like, paintball guns and airsoft guns and giant swords and stupid crap like that. And fanboys just eat it up and they buy them. I don't know why. They're overpriced, they're crappy, you can't actually carry it around at the con.
Now, if you're over 18 and a little kid comes up to you and says, hey, if I give you money, will you buy me a sword? You say, all right. You don't say no, even though that's a good thing to say. You sure as hell don't just say yes, sure. That's also a stupid thing to say. What you say is, how much is the sword? And let's say he says the sword's $100. You say, you give me $150 and I'll buy you the $100 sword. That's the way to do it, because then you go and you get a $50 awesome thing somewhere else.
Yeah. See, I generally disagree with that.
No, I like it. It's a good way.
Well, one, that doesn't work, because usually they ship the sword to your hotel room, or they give it to you in a giant sealed box, and you have, like, you're escorted out, then you have to take it and store it somewhere. Mostly, they make you ship them home.
I'd ship them home. I'd just give them the kid's address.
Yeah, that doesn't work if you pay with a credit card.
I guess not.
Because the billing address doesn't match up.
It all depends.
Yeah, Scott's dumb. Don't buy swords for little kids.
Well, not like little kids, but like if like a 16-year-old kid.
Yeah,
know.
A 16-year-old punk kid. You want to give him a sword at an anime con.
Hey, if he's dumb with it, that's his problem. You know? Plus, you can always deny. You could be like, no, I was just buying the sword for me. And then you make off with the kid's money.
All right.
He was dumb enough to give it to you.
Well, that said, we've talked a long time about a lot of topics with a very little organization, and I think we're going to have to do a part three in this series.
What are we going to talk about in part three?
Basically, first of all, we got to talk about how to leave the con,
yeah,
which is actually more complicated than you'd think. Like, you'd be surprised. If you don't plan out leaving the con at the end of your experience, you're going to have a nightmare and you won't do anything fun on Sunday.
Yeah, there's a time when you have to get out of the check out of the hotel by. And if you don't check out by then, you get, you know, the hotel yells at you for leaving late.
And in fact, that time is a lie, because you want to check out like 4 hours before that if you want any chance of having a good time on Sunday.
Yeah. Because think about it, that time when you have to check out is while there's convention happening.
That, and we'll also talk about most cons have a dance or a rave, and we have many opinions regarding those.
That's a good thing to talk about.
So?
Oh, we should probably also talk about if a lot of conventions, even, you know, of all sorts, have artist alleys or things nowadays.
Oh, yeah, we'll also talk about the artist alleys.
We'll talk about what to do if you want to be in the artist alley or visit it and such.
Yep. We out. And that was Geek Nights with Rim and Scott. Special thanks to DJ Pretzel for our opening theme.
Be sure to visit our website at www.frontrowcrew.com. If you like our podcasts, you'll love our forums. Make sure you visit them. You can send your email feedback to geeknights@gmail.com. And if you want, you can leave us a voicemail at 206-333-1537.
Geek Nights airs every weeknight, Monday through Thursday.
Geek Nights is recorded with absolutely no studio and no audience. But unlike those other talk shows, it's actually recorded at night.